B-Pod Studios.
Gasper and Murray have scorching hot takes, twisting your mind with Pat Celtics and Bays. They'll also talk socks and out-of-town fame. Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Just call them up on this Saturday.
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
What with the Bucks? You want to do me with those Bucks? With those Bucks? That's right. Here we go. From the Town Fair Tire Studio, it's Gasper and Murray here. 98.5 of Sports Hub. Morning, Chris. How are you?
I'm good, Jim. How are you? What's new?
Not too much. You know, 90-minute show today. In, okay. Out. Get to go home, go back to bed, because this is good sleeping weather.
Great sleeping weather.
Get ready for the NFL Divisional Playoffs. They are here. The Patriots, for the second year in a row, are not part of it. In my opinion, I don't think they're going to be part of it for the foreseeable future. I hope I'm wrong. They can certainly help prove me wrong by finding their next quarterback. I think that is the du jour topic for the Patriots as we go through this offseason. Who's going to be the next Pats quarterback? A lot of talk this week of Mac and Cheese Jones of Alabama being the answer. I kid by calling him that because he's a little doughy. Maybe it's a trade for Jimmy Garoppolo. I know you have some interest in bringing back Jimmy GQ.
I do.
Maybe it's trade for Matt Stafford.
What about these Deshaun Watson crazies?
Look, I would trade. I'm not even kidding. I said this on Felgren Mass. I would trade the whole draft for Deshaun Watson. I know then he would have no weapons to throw to because the wide receivers here stink. Julian Edelman may or may not be retiring. He seems like he's probably at the end anyway. Like, that really wouldn't make much sense. But that's how badly I would want Deshaun Watson. I think he's one of the top five or six quarterbacks in the league. I really believe that. He's just in a terrible situation. I felt it at the time. He should have never signed that extension there. And now, unfortunately, he's reaping what he sows. Like, that Jack Easterby snake down there. There are now articles coming out. There was a great one this morning from Jenny Vrentis of Sports Illustrated. That just goes to show you what a manipulative snake Easterby is, what a dope that Cal McNair is, just one of these lucky sperm owners. Like, he is in a terrible, terrible situation. You see his vague tweets yesterday. I was at a 2, now I'm at a 10. Like, he wants out. I just don't know how the Patriots could ever make it happen. I would trade Belichick straight up for Deshaun Watson if they wanted to do that. But I don't know if he would want to be part of the Patriots organization when he's had a deal with Bill O'Brien and now this snake Easterby who have come from the Patriots organization. So maybe there's that, you know, he feels like there's some sort of taint there and wouldn't want anything to do with it. And I just don't think the Patriots have enough ammo to do it.
That's my biggest thing. Like, what are you going to trade? Like, you know, I know Patriots fans are high on J.C. Jackson, but like, that's not going to get it done. And then I've heard a lot of Stephon Gilmore. You know, he's a great player, and obviously he's not that far removed from being defensive player of the year, but also he's in his 30s, and you're not going to trade a franchise quarterback for a cornerback who's in his 30s and on the decline. Doesn't mean he can't still play. He's still very, very good as a corner, but there's just, why would you do that?
Yeah. No, believe me, I would cut off my right thumb. Hand, even. I need the right hand. Yeah. Left, not so much. But that's how badly I would want Deshaun Watson. But the reason I'm so adamant and such a prick on social media about it, like, it's not going to happen, because it's not going to happen.
They don't have the weapons.
There are teams, I think, that could make a real play for him, Miami being one of them. Maybe give them Tua and that pick back at number 3. Maybe even San Francisco.
I think San Francisco could be involved.
You know, off... Oh, is that informed?
No, just a hunch.
Okay. Well, because that's one that I thought, just because, you know, they have the ammo to do it in terms of maybe giving up a couple of picks. Maybe they send Garoppolo.
Yep.
And think of who he would be able to work with there in terms of offensive weapons, and George Kittle, Debo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk. Like, that offense with Kyle Shanahan, the things he could do with Deshaun Watson. Like, that, if I'm Watson, that's what I'm saying. Like, listen, if I want out, do me the solid. Try to get me to San Francisco. You can benefit as well. Maybe you get yourself a quarterback and Garoppolo and
but
more
Jim.
Picks.
Watson will move heaven and earth just to play with Belichick.
Oh,
right?
God, you delusional idiots. Like, it ain't going to happen. I'd love for it to happen, but, you know, I got to give you the wet sausage of reality across your face. It ain't going to happen. Another one that's been thrown out there is Carson Wentz. Maybe trade for Carson Wentz. This is a player I certainly want no part of, as he shriveled this year on and off the field for Philadelphia. But I get why people would be interested in Carson Wentz. Still young, flashed in 2017. He was in the MVP conversation
before he tore his ACL against the Rams.
Yeah, so let me talk you people out of him now. I just tweeted this link to this article in the Philadelphia Inquirer today by Jeff McClain. You know, I'll read everything. If I have some interest in it, especially, you know, I think the more that you consume, the better informed you are, and it makes this job easier. So I'll read pretty much anything. But when I saw the title of this article from Jeff McClain in the Philadelphia Inquirer, Inside Carson Wentz's Turbulent Season and the Forces Behind His Regression, I was like, oh, I'm all in here because I don't like him anyway, and I need some ammo to talk you Wentz people, trade for Wentz. To talk you out of it. And boy, there are, I mean, it's a long read, but I just want to give you like the juiciest parts of this article about Wentz. And a lot of this comes from people within the organization who are obviously unnamed because they weren't allowed to speak on the record or they don't want to lose their jobs. But here's some of the juicy stuff about this that just speaks to what I feel about Wentz, because I just don't think, I don't think that kid gets it. And I think this year was proof of it. And the fact that he shrunk and was defensive, the fact that Jalen Hurts, look, he was having a bad year. So I can understand why the coaches went to Jalen Hurts over him by the time they got to Green Bay late in the season. And instead of him wanting to fight for his job, he just bitched about it. And I thought that was such a bad look, Chris. So here's some of the stuff from this article. The 28-year-old, Wentz, of course, had increasingly rebuffed advice, defied criticism, and clashed with former coach Doug Peterson last season, according to Eagles sources. Every great quarterback wants to be coached, and they want to be coached hard and by the best, and it doesn't seem like Wentz wants that, according to a source. It's kind of like whoever's coaching him is working for him, but it can't be that way. That's all I needed to know. I don't think that there's a worse attribute for a quarterback in the NFL, especially a young one, Chris, than not wanting to take to hard coaching. And that's really all this article is about. The meat of it is that he is resistant to coaching. His resistance to hard instruction made him lose faith from the coaches, and an unwillingness to accept blame for his mistakes hurt him in the locker room. Part of this article goes on to say there was a disconnect even before Wentz was benched. Peterson would call a play only for his quarterback to occasionally kill it for no other reason than his personal distaste for Peterson. It became a pissing match between the two, one of the sources said.
Wow, that's bad.
Isn't that terrible?
That is so bad. And I've been a Wentz defender, but that is bad. Now, wait a second. Whoever's saying that, here's the one thing I would say on that. Whoever's saying that he killed it just because it was a pissing match, to me, just reading, and I know Jeff McClain very well. We've had him on the show. You know, I feel like he's one of the best football reporters in America. But I feel like that's coming from Peterson. That's coming from someone who thinks that, or who's on Peterson's side or in his camp, because I find it hard to believe a quarterback's just killing plays because I could see him losing faith in the play calling and being like, I don't trust these guys, but just to be like, I don't like this guy, I'm killing this play, that seems a bit much.
Well, how about some stuff from unnamed veteran players who said, quote, he doesn't understand that he lost games for us. He will never admit that, and that's a problem because he can't get it corrected. In the quarterback room, when his errors were pointed out, Wentz would sometimes make irrelevant excuses. And the offensive coordinator that he started working with,
Press Taylor.
Yes, Press Taylor wouldn't correct him, and that's part of this article too. That Press Taylor essentially is like a bobo for Wentz and never really criticizes him all that much. And if he does, it's with kid gloves. So this goes on to say, for instance, there would be a play when Wentz didn't throw to an open receiver. The read was drawn up as designed. The coverage played out as expected, and Wentz would be asked why he didn't pull the trigger. And Wentz would say, well, the look wasn't there, or he would overemphasize the pass rush. And when it was suggested the play be run again in practice to get it right, he would object.
Ooh, that's bad.
Everyone believed Carson had no clue about when to get the ball out on time, a source said, and as a result, he made his offensive line look terrible in times that they were actually playing fine. This kid's not it. Like, okay, yeah, there's two sides to every story, fine, and like you say, maybe some of this is coming from Doug Peterson or those that are close with Doug Peterson who just lost his job this week. But Chris, a guy that is resistant to hard coaching, I want no part of. And I think Drew Bledsoe had this with Bill Parcells, and he wasn't initially resistant to it those first couple of years. But if you remember going back when Pete Carroll first came here, boy, did any time in terms of being in front of the media and having a camera in front of him, he was always quick to say, like, you know, it was, you know, it's more about us now. And Bill Parcells took too much of the credit. Like, he was like, oh, wah. Like, it was such a wah thing. Like, oh, God forbid you got to deal with hard coaching. And to Brady's credit, you know, I think especially in those first five, even the first decade he was here, he was not resistant to hard coaching. Now, after time, a couple of decades, you have him say things like, well, I got all the answers to the test.
But he's been coached pretty hard this year by Arians, hasn't he?
Well, I don't know.
I mean, Arians came out, and look, I'm not the biggest Bruce Arians fan, but he's come out publicly a number of times and chastised Brady and said, well, like, no, the look was there, or we have to complete these defenses.
Well, that's true, yeah. In some of these post games, he was. But who knows what's going on really behind the scenes. I don't know how much, you know, criticism he's really getting at this point in his career, what he's looked at, rightfully so, as the greatest to ever play that position. And at the end here, you know, was Brady resistant to hard coaching? Sure. But I think at that point, when he'd established himself as the greatest of all time at the position, like, he gets it, you know? But when you are 28 years old, you've only been in the league a few years, to be this resistant to coaching, to look at the film and be like, nah, it wasn't my fault, and hey, we should try to run this at practice again, and basically say, nah, I'm good. I want no part of this kid. And so what? You would want to maybe counter and say, well, he hasn't played under a Bill Belichick, and Belichick had, well, I don't know. Like, how's Belichick done with other quarterbacks that aren't Tom Brady? If Belichick could wave the wand and solve all of the issues with any quarterback, even if they're, you know, look like they might be washed up like Cam Newton this year, well, then Cam Newton wouldn't have had the year that he's had. Some guys can't be changed, Chris, when it comes to resistance to hard coaching, I believe. And that's one of the reasons, and maybe the main reason, now that I've read this article, I want no part of Wentz. I thought he had a terrible season on the field anyway, but some of that stuff, like I said, with Jalen Hurts and how he shrunk in that moment and basically was saying, like, get me out of here. I don't want to fight for my job. I thought that was such a terrible look. But after reading this, and again, I tweeted it out at Big Jim Murray, I implore you to read it. I don't know how anyone would want Carson Wentz in a Patriots uniform next year or try to make a big deal for him.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the question is, again, it goes back to sort of the thing we've talked about before, the in Belichick you trust thing. Now, again, someone who likes hard coaching, I wouldn't think would do well in New England. But this story also says that he's a tireless worker and he's dedicated and he's type A. So maybe if that hard coaching is coming from Bill Belichick, maybe if you get some humble pie and that you're sent out of Philly, maybe you respond differently. I'm certainly not defending him. These are major, major red flags. I just feel like at this situation for the Patriots, I think any quarterback you bring in is going to have question marks. And you're going to have to overlook those question marks to bring somebody in that you think you can coach up and make it work here, whether that's someone through the draft. There's obviously question marks in young quarterbacks who come in through the draft because you don't know if they can play in the NFL. Somebody like Wentz, there are some question marks about his comportment, his makeup, his personality. There could be injury questions about somebody like Garoppolo. Where you're at, you're going to have to take somebody on who has either question marks, it's the unknown because they haven't played in the NFL, or someone who's coming to your team who has played in the NFL and has baggage.
What a terrible place to be in for this team. Like, that's why I said, you know, to our young millennial on-air personalities here, like Matt McCarthy and Tim McCone, welcome to the suck, guys, because I think it's going to be bad for a while because they don't have an answer at this position. Now, maybe they can fix that by drafting someone, bringing them along here these next couple of years, and maybe that's Mac Jones. I don't know. But I would like to see them draft in the first couple of rounds. But whatever retread they're going to bring in, Chris, like, ultimately I'm not going to love any of them. Maybe Matt Stafford is the one that I could talk myself into the most, but even he has, well, he's played for the Detroit Lions, so how much Lions, Lions loser is now going through his system. And, you know, a guy that's had, you know, a broken back, something that prematurely ended Tony Romo's career, kind of that same kind of thing. Like, I don't know, that shakes me a little bit too. But I like the makeup. When he's on, I think he's good. If you got him out of Detroit and maybe fix him here for the next couple of years, I think that's a good stopgap guy. But any of these,
I think he's better, Drew Bledsoe.
But any of these stopgap guys, though, like, you're right. Like, they're going to come with red flags.
Yeah.
There's going to be issues. There's a lot of question marks. But more than anything else, guys, it's divisional playoff weekend here in the NFL. The Patriots aren't in it, and I don't think they're going to be for the foreseeable future, but what would you like to see them do at quarterback? And I'm telling you, read this thing about Carson Wentz. I don't know how you would want to talk yourself into making the Patriots make a big deal for him going forward. No thanks.
Yeah, so this does change it for me, the calculus in terms of what you're willing to give up for this guy, because this is a guy I wouldn't mind seeing them make a move for. But before I looked at it and said, okay, this is a guy you're getting, and maybe you give something up because he's a proven NFL starter. Now this is more like, okay, this is a reclamation project. Like, almost
totally.
Like you're taking a flyer on a guy.
All right, I want to get your thoughts on some of these games this weekend. And, of course, the most important of the games, you know, our quarterback, Tom Brady, playing tomorrow night for our Bucks. Go Bucks, go. Go Bucks, go. Hey, New England, what do you say? Brady's going to win Sunday. At least I hope. But it's all gravy regardless, and we can get into that,
too. It's all gravy, baby.
You can try to bluff and counter with, well, no, if he plays, but no. He won last week. He and our Bucks and our quarterback won last Saturday night. So he's got a playoff pelt on, you know.
Does.
And so now he's in the playoffs. He has a playoff win. Anything going forward, just gravy. It's Brady gravy, baby. And we'll get into that next here on Gasper and Murray.
Gasper and Murray. 98.5, the Sports Hub. BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Gasper and Murray on 98.5 Sports Hub.
You know, this quarterback matchup is pretty special. And I'm just wondering, you know, all the years that you've been doing this, how often do you kind of look over your shoulder and use that as motivation, looking at guys like Drew and see, you know, that he's still doing it at such a high level? Like, has that been a push for you throughout your career?
He's a lot younger than me. I mean, he's 18 months younger. 18 months ago, I felt pretty good, so I've got a little advanced age on him and experience, but I'm hanging in there. He's had a terrific year, and he's a great player. I've known him for a long time. Always had a great amount of respect for him, and going all the way back to his Purdue days. And my roommate, when I first got to the Patriots, was from Purdue and was really good friends with Drew. And, always just kept up with him and got to know him somewhat well over the years. And just think so much of him as a person, as a player. And, I know what it takes to do what he's doing. He knows what it takes to do what I'm doing. And I think there's just a lot of mutual respect.
That's our quarterback, Tom Brady, talking about the matchup tomorrow night against fellow old Drew Brees. Bucks, Saints, our Bucks at the New Orleans Saints tomorrow night, 6:40 kickoff. The marquee game this divisional weekend, yes, featuring our quarterback, Tom Brady. The Bucks, a 3-point underdog in that game. They were waxed in the two regular season games. I'm sure I don't have to remind you because, you know, you've been paying attention. You've been still watching our quarterback. Oh, and the numbers back that up, by the way. I know you sent me that link, but I saw it yesterday from Chad Finn of the Boston Globe. And I saw this kind of, kicking around the internet throughout the week, or at least on social media, Chris, that the Bucks numbers for their games, because I think only two weren't televised locally, they were pretty good this year. Well, the Patriots' numbers, not so much.
Down about 26%.
Yeah, down a little more than 26%, so not so good. So even if you say you're not watching, you're watching. You know you are. You're like a jealous lover, a scorn. I'm not rooting for him. Watching it from afar. Oh, she's lost that weight, and she looks so much better now. And he does look good, too, at 43. I don't know if you watched, and I'm sure you did watch the wild card game last week.
But I did.
At one point during the broadcast, Chris, they flash 43-year-old Tom Brady next to 43-year-old George Blanda. And Brady looks like 30 years old in the photo, and George Blanda looks like that old 43. Like what
43? He looks like he's 73. Did you see that photo? He looked like he just ripped a butt.
Yeah. No, his whereas Brady has, the TB12 method and working with Alex Guerrero, George Blanda, his diet is bacon and unfiltered Campbell's.
He probably talks like this, kid. Get the hell out of my way.
Let me just tell you. So let me break it down for you because you'll appreciate that. Brady was an L.A. 43. Blanda was a Boston 43.
Just gray skin. A broken soul.
Looking like the man in the mountain from New Hampshire. Just terrible.
Yeah. All right, coach. You want me to prepare for the game? I'm going to go down to Kelly's and get a roast beef. That's hard training right there. Yeah, George Blanda. Yeah.
But what do you think about this game? I mean, considering those two regular season games where, I mean, especially that Week 9 Sunday night matchup, Chris, which was over halfway through the first quarter. Like, it was evident. You and I, despite the numbers, because you still have these nerds out there as well, if you actually look at the numbers at the Bucks offensive line this year, they've actually been one of the better offensive lines. That is hogwash. That game showed me the offensive line for the Bucks is Swiss cheese. You can't trust either of those redheads up front. Their guards stink. And if you pressure Brady up the middle, it's like, but any quarterback, but that's usually what throws him off kilter. They were able to do that. The Saints were early and often in that game. He never had a shot. And like I said, it felt like it was over within 5 or 6 minutes of the first quarter. And they have the personnel, the Saints, to rush only four, flood the middle of the field. I can't expect they're going to do anything different because that's how they're going to be able to beat the Bucks tomorrow night. And so I have very, very low expectations for our quarterback and our Bucks tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. I think, again, I've said to you during the course of the year that the biggest challenge for Brady is trying to change that Buccaneers culture, bring the attention to detail, the selflessness, the things that basically were instituted in New England with Bill Belichick and Brady being a big part of building that culture as well, because he was the star and he was willing to accept those things. I think this game is a litmus test to see how far the Bucs have come in that. And I think in just 1 year without an offseason program, it's difficult for him to change the culture. When it's just about talent and throwing to Mike Evans or throwing to Chris Godwin, I think by this point in the year you can establish chemistry. But to change culture takes a while. And I still don't think the Bucs know how to win. And what I'm really intrigued about, too, is this is one of those games where if you are Tampa Bay, you have to realize just running your offense, what you do. And Brady had the most yards per attempt, intended yards in the air. I saw this on Pro Football Reference, of any quarterback in the league at over 9. Against that Saints team, they need to play more of a Patriot style of offense with Brady. Take the short stuff, get run after catch. Are they willing to do that, or are Leftwich and Bruce Arians just going to say, okay, we're just going to run our offense again and leave Brady out there to be a sacrificial lamb? Because their traditional offense, what they do, throwing it down the field, you know, no risk it, no biscuit, that's not going to work against the Saints. And are you willing to change what you do enough to match up with this team? Because that's what Belichick would do. I know that's what Brady wants to do, but I just don't know if Arians and Leftwich have it in them, if that Buccaneers team has it in them to be able to do what the Patriots did for so many years, Jim, which is morph into whatever team they need to be that week to win.
But didn't last week show you that they might be able to do it because they left Gronk back in to block? It was more about Cameron Brate at tight end.
Yeah.
And they neutralized Chase Young and that Washington defensive front. And I was really surprised by that because he still got sacked, I think, 3 times. But Chase Young, you didn't hear his name ring out until the end of the game, where he goes up to Brady and be like, hey, man, I was just like joshing around saying, you know, I want Brady.
It's all love. It's all respect, whatever he said.
Yeah. And so that showed me like, oh, well, maybe they can change, because I was with you. Like, they're going to do what we do. And, and like, that has annoyed the hell out of me watching this team this year. But last week it showed me, oh, well, maybe they're actually listening to Brady, because that to me, you know, to give more credit to our quarterback, felt to me like Brady went to Arians and Leftwich and said, like, listen, we need someone to stay in and block.
Well, that was very Belichickian in the sense of, okay, they have this guy who's a game wrecker. If they're going to beat us, we're not going to let this one guy wreck the game.
Yeah.
Okay, they're going to have to beat us with other guys. But still, that offense in general, do you see Byron Leftwich saying, okay, we're going to check it down to Leonard Fournette a lot. We're going to run some wide receiver screens. We're going to run some running back screens. We're going to try and do these things to slow down the Saints pass rush. Or do you think they're just going to say, okay, maybe we'll keep an extra guy in protection, and, you know, Brady can hang in there long enough to just chuck it up to Mike Evans for a jump ball?
Oh, it's more
I think
that.
Brady is handicapped by the culture of the team and the coaching staff. And that's why I feel like, look, if he goes on and beats, you know, a Super Bowl winning coach in Sean Payton and a Super Bowl winning quarterback in Drew Brees on the road in this playoff game, I think that's great. It's a feather in his cap. If they lose, I look at it and say that there's only so much he can do, and so much he can do to affect the Buccaneers, to take the Buccaneers, the taint of the Buccaneers, off the Buccaneers in year one.
And that's, I think that is factually correct, Chris. Like, this, anything beyond last week is just, it's Brady gravy.
I agree.
Yep.
I agree. It's like all gravy, baby.
The expectations should be minimal at best. And yes, we can pick apart the game if he's terrible in it tomorrow night.
Absolutely. If he plays poorly.
But, I think there's only so much one can do when you're one of 53. That's all.
Yeah, and I mean, I think, obviously Brady will get credit if they win, and you can blame him to a degree if they lose. But I think if they win this game, It will show you the impact he's had off the field on the Bucs, and it will show you, and you'll have to give credit to the other people in that organization. You'll have to give credit to Bruce Arians, to Byron Leftwich, to some other people. I will show you how far the Bucs have come, how much they've grown, I think, if they're able to win this game. I don't think they can just win this game on Brady.
What are your thoughts on some of these other games this weekend? I think there's a potential for one real dud. Typically, I think this is, like,
you love this. This is your favorite weekend.
It is my favorite weekend, and even I will admit, while I was resistant to change, as most people are, but especially with my beloved NFL, which changes year in, year out, they've watered down the product, but still, they got me over a barrel. I was resistant to the change of adding more playoff teams. Last weekend, pretty damn good.
It was fun.
pretty damn good.
Except for that Saints-Bears game. That game stunk.
That was unwatchable. But, you know, you're always going to get at least one dud wild card weekend. But this is where you see true competition. We do have, I think, a potential for one dud game, and that's the first one today. And I think that's why it is the first game today, Rams at Packers.
Really?
Yeah. I mean,
number one offense versus number one defense? You don't think it's going to be interesting?
And I think that Rams defense, and we know defense travels, I think is good enough to maybe get them to the Super Bowl. But Goff with the pin in his thumb, and I'm no Goff guy anyway, neither are you. Like, I just don't know how they're going to be able to move the ball. The Packers are on 2 weeks rest. Sounds like there's going to be some weather there. The Rams haven't won in Lambeau once in 25 years. Like, that one could get ugly quickly, I feel like. But the rest of these games, I think, will be really competitive.
Really? So I thought you were going to say the Cleveland-KC game, because I feel like that could get out of hand.
Yeah. All right. We'll get more thoughts on Chris and how he feels about these divisional games if you want to weigh in, too. 617-779-0985. Just 90 minutes today, so now we got a little less than an hour to go. Coming up at noon, we'll be focusing on Celtics, that win last night after they're finally back in action after a week because of COVID issues. So we'll do an abbreviated Sports Hub Celtics show coming up. But if you want to join us, 617-779-0985.
Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray. On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
You're listening to Gasper and Murray.
Fantastic chemistry.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Hey, it's Gasper Murray here on 98.5, the Sports Hub. NFL Divisional Weekend. Two straight years, Patriots not part of it. Going forward, I think it's going to be a long time before they are again, unless they figure out the quarterback situation. And you got a lot of quarterbacks possibly changing teams in 2021.
Yeah.
Deshaun Watson wants out of Houston, and rightfully so. Maybe Tua Tagovailoa. Carson Wentz, who was talking about earlier in this article in the Philadelphia Inquirer, I would implore you to read if you want Wentz, because I think it will change your mind after you read it. Jimmy Garoppolo, Mitch Trubisky, Matt Stafford. Dwayne Haskins still out there. Maybe Matt Ryan. Now they got a new
Marcus
head.
Mariota.
Yeah.
See, I wanted to say just quickly, I think the way the coaching hires have gone so far in the NFL actually benefits the Patriots.
How
at
so?
Least in the draft. Well, okay, Arthur Smith to Atlanta tells me that they are still interested in Matt Ryan. And might be willing to move forward with him and still sort of build around him.
Right. So he was in Tennessee. He had this reclamation project with Ryan Tannehill. If you look at the way Tannehill's improved these last few years, ostensibly he'd be able to go to Atlanta and do that with Matt Ryan for a couple of years. Okay.
Yes.
All right.
The Robert Saleh hiring with the Jets and the rumors that they like Jimmy G, the fact that they might bring in Mike LaFleur. I know that San Francisco people like Sam Darnold, so maybe they feel like they can either be in a position to salvage Darnold, or maybe they bring in Garoppolo, so maybe they're not in the market for a quarterback in the draft. So when you look at some of these hires, I think it has sort of gone in a way that could ultimately benefit the Patriots. Also, now Coach Bro, Dan Campbell, seems like he might get the job in Detroit. And from what I've read over there, a lot of the trepidation that coaching candidates have had over that job is they actually want Stafford to stay and they don't know if the organization is committed. I have a hard time believing that Dan Campbell would leave the Saints and take that Lions job unless he has some sort of commitment that Stafford's the quarterback moving forward. So if all these coaching situations end up in the incumbent quarterbacks staying or in some of these teams not being in the market necessarily for a quarterback in the draft, that could really benefit the Patriots.
Okay. Yeah, I could see. Maybe that speaks to why Todd McShay in his first mock draft on ESPN had Justin Fields dropping to 15. If some of these teams stick with their quarterbacks, then maybe that could happen. I want to get into more about some of the coaching carousel that's going on.
Yeah.
And that Josh McDaniels and Eric Bieniemy as well.
Yeah.
Sounds like they're going to be on the outside looking in, but we'll get into that. And I want to get your thoughts on Urban Meyer as well. But
yeah, the three jobs left to me are the three best jobs, by the way.
These other games on the slate this week, and obviously, you know, our Bucks, our quarterback, he's got nothing to lose. It's all Brady gravy. And even if you try to block on Monday and he's bad in the game, it goes in one ear and out the other.
I'll just give you one stat, and this is why we believe it's all Brady gravy. Bill Belichick, 26 seasons as a coach, playoff wins without Tom Brady, 1. Tom Brady, One playoff game played without Bill Belichick. Playoff wins, one.
So there you go, people. You got nothing. You got nothing to stand on. What with the Bucks? You want to do me with those Bucks? With those Bucks? That's right. Yep. We'll still get into it, and I'm going to get wild for tomorrow night. But there's nothing to lose. Cleveland, Kansas City, that's one that you think could go sideways quickly. I feel like, so that game last Sunday, it was like Cleveland morphed into the 2004 Patriots. And that, I think, had more to say about the Steelers than anything else. The Steelers were as big a frauds as last year's Patriots teams. That's like the Spider-Man meme of the two Spider-Mans pointing at each other. Like, same team, like just complete frauds. But that being said, Cleveland, when they can get going like they did last week, like their secondary blows, but offensively, when they can control the line of scrimmage, you get Kareem Hunt going, you get Nick Chubb going, they could do what they did with Pittsburgh last week. And I think they can maybe do that with Kansas City if they can control the line of scrimmage in this game, get those two running backs going. At the very least, Chris, I think they can cover. I think the spread's too high. Depending on where you look, it's Kansas City by 9, 9.5, maybe 10. And the Chiefs looked mostly disinterested, I think, for the better part of the second half of this season. I don't know if they can be had. And if you remember last year in the playoffs, like they're down, what was it, like 20-something to Houston in a matter of 30 seconds, they lead by 10. So with Patrick Mahomes and that offense, look, they can score in 5 seconds, and it's all of a sudden it feels like a blowout. But I don't know. I give Cleveland kind of a sniff in this game. I think they...
You want to pick Cleveland here.
I would pick Cleveland to cover. How about that?
Okay. All right.
I probably sound like I'm hedging by saying that. I still think Kansas City wins, but I think Cleveland can cover in this game.
I mean, one thing that's in the favor of the Browns is that Kansas City was 21st in the NFL in run defense, and maybe they can have one of those Belichickian game plans where it's just Hunt and Chubb, and it's playing keep away, and it's trying to limit the possessions for Patrick Mahomes. But I think that's their only chance. And I think once they get behind, I know Mayfield and Mahomes had this legendary shootout in college, but in the pros, to me, it's no contest. If it becomes a shootout between Mahomes and Mayfield, Cleveland's going to get blown off the field. I just don't think that Mayfield can keep up. And I think he'll press and try and play hero ball if they fall behind and they have to put it on his arm. And that's a mistake. I think their chance is being able to generate turnovers, play keep away from Mahomes. And I just am not confident. That's a very narrow path to victory.
All right, and you give the Rams a sniff in Green Bay.
I do.
I don't. I think that could go.
Because you have Jalen Ramsey, who maybe can take out or at least limit Devontae Adams.
Okay.
And then when you look at it from that standpoint, now you're making the others for Green Bay beat you. The Rams have a very good defensive line. Maybe Green Bay tries to run the ball, but maybe Rodgers doesn't like that. You know, Rodgers wants to pass it and throw it all around and do his thing, and maybe he gets a little impatient there. I just think with that defense, I give them a fighting chance. I do. The biggest thing in that game will be the red zone, because Green Bay is number one in the NFL when it comes to red zone touchdown percentage. They've scored touchdowns on 80% of their red zone possessions. That was the best in the league. Also, Aaron Rodgers has thrown a touchdown pass in 14 straight postseason games. So if they can buckle down in the red zone, this could be a bend but don't break sort of effort from the Rams. You get in the red zone, you take away Devontae Adams, who had the 18 touchdowns. I think you might give yourself a sniff there.
And then the game tonight, which I think is really interesting, because I think the Ravens, the way they're playing with this 6-game winning streak, they look like a completely different team. They look like the Ravens of last year. Lamar Jackson finally gets his first win in the playoffs. I think this is a bad matchup for the Bills. Buffalo obviously has a very strong passing game,
yeah.
But if you look at the Ravens' defense, it's sixth against the pass. They're holding teams to 221 yards a game, 156.5 passing yards per game over their last four. This is a bad matchup for Buffalo. Ravens are rolling. I don't know who the hell to pick in this game. I like that Buffalo team, but I don't know. I also wasn't all that impressed with Baltimore's win in Tennessee last week. I know they came down from double digits. They were down 10-0 in that game, and it was the first time Lamar Jackson ever came back from a double-digit deficit, so good on him there. But I don't know. I just think that they're so one-dimensional and I don't really trust him still in the passing game, but still, their defense has been awesome.
It has. And their running game has been awesome, the way that J.K. Dobbins, who scored a touchdown in 7 consecutive games, including the playoffs. And then listen to this, including the wild card round, Baltimore has averaged 296.3 yards per game over their last three. So they've run on everybody and anybody that's been put in front of them.
And 14 rushing touchdowns during the 6-game winning streak.
It's unbelievable. So. I'll tell you why I'm going with Baltimore in this. And it has to do with my Josh Allen hate. I think
still dug in, huh?
I'm not as dug in as I was. This is more like Garoppolo, where I will acknowledge the guy is good, but I'm not necessarily going to go to the place that some of his fanboys go to. I think Wink Martindale on that defense, which is very multiple and can bring a lot of pressures, I think that they can confuse Josh Allen and get him to turn the football over. Daboll is in discussion for all these jobs. The word on the street is he's the favorite for the Los Angeles Chargers job. I think sometimes these coordinators who are doing this stuff, they kind of want to show off, you know, show the league what they can do. I think coming into this, they're going to try and win it with Josh Allen. And I think Wink Martindale, the defensive coordinator for the Baltimore Ravens, is going to be able to confuse him and generate some turnovers. I don't like that matchup for Buffalo. The multiplicity of the Baltimore defense, their ability to blitz and pressure against Josh Allen. I think he could revert back to the old Josh Allen because he's going to try too hard. And he's going to revert to some of the hero ball he's played in the past. And I thought you saw some of that a little bit at times against Indianapolis. I mean, he played great in that game. But there were times when it was like, okay, just throw it away, Josh. Like, you're having a great game. And he can't help himself.
I know. You and Bedard still want him to fail so badly.
This is true.
You anti-Josh Allen guys, you don't want to see it. You still think he's got some suck left in him.
Yes.
And he's going to cost the Bills a game. And if not for the Bucs, I've been very vocal about this.
Yeah. He's Western New York Carson Wentz, and he's having his MVP season.
Oh, man, that's cold. Yeah, and he has been helped. I will say this. He has been helped out tremendously by Stephon Diggs, who has been really good there this year. But I will say, if not for our Bucks and our Brady,
yeah,
they get knocked off. I'm all in on these Bills. Give me these Buffalo
what
thrills.
What is wrong with you?
Well, this is something I believe Mike and Woburn also wants to ask.
God.
Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, Chris, you know, you welcomed Jim back into the Brady Bobo Club last week.
I did, yes.
Well, I'm afraid I'm going to have to drum Jim out of the misery fan club.
Oh no!
If you root for any team from Buffalo to do well, you are a shouting fraud. That's what you are. 100%. Jim, one of Jim's most embarrassing moments in Boston sports is the Ray Bourque rally at City Hall. What's worse? Cheering for your kicker who lost you the Super Bowl at City Hall. That's what Buffalo did. That town deserves nothing, nothing but it, like an asteroid strike. It literally is the armpit of the universe, and their failure will just encourage that suicide cult of a fan base to just do more self-harm and entertain the entire country, you know, as it goes along. I can't think of anything better than the Bills immolating themselves in tragic fashion in the playoffs. And you almost saw it last weekend when on first down, Josh Allen took a 23-yard strip sack.
Yes, yes. Preach, and, Mike.
Right. And then when they have to run out the clock, the idiot offensive coordinator calls a pass play. That should have been two runs. You run the clock. You try to make it so that embedded Bill Frank Reich continues to choke on the other team's part. Like that was that. I thought that was the biggest thing that happened in that game is that the old school Buffalo choke artist Frank Reich basically handed that game to Buffalo. So I am really looking forward to the Baltimore Ravens walking to the center of Ralph Wilson Stadium and taking a giant steaming dump on their logo and having and then spending the rest of the week watching Bills fans throw themselves through a table off Niagara Falls.
Mike, let me ask you a question. If one of them had to win, okay, one of them has to win, there's no choice, the Bills fans or the Browns fans, which one would you say, okay, fine, you win this weekend?
It's the Browns fans because Cleveland was made. We know Cleveland has no shame. They rooted for LeBron when he came back. And the NBA, unfortunately, gifted them a title. So they've already tasted victory. Buffalo, we're talking about a town that printed state champions hats for the Sabres. They are shamelessly desperate for a championship, and I never want to see them get it, ever.
Thanks for the call, Mike. And I understand why I'm rightfully, you know, kicked out of, you know, team shot.
The Misery Index Club?
The Misery Index Club. But there's something about this Bills team I like. I found them entertaining to watch. So that's one reason. Two, I really do appreciate their fan base and how they like to light themselves on fire and do sex acts in the parking lot, you know, before and during the game, sometimes even in the stadium. And part of it's spite, too, I will admit this, you know, because there's this thing now, Chris, that with, like, Patriots fans, like, how dare you root for another team in the AFC East? What are we, SEC fans? Like, is this the South now? Like, that's a college football thing. Like, what the hell do I care? So part of it's spite, too. Guess what? They're better than you, and they're going to be for a while now. So part of it's spite, yeah. Go Bills. If not our Bucks and our Brady, give me these Buffalo thrills. I want your thoughts on Urban Meyer getting that gig down in Jacksonville, which I find just weird, considering he's been on the sideline, you know, doing TV for 2 years. And he's never, ever had anything to do with an NFL team. He's never been a coordinator. He's never, like, sniffed around the NFL, but he gets this gig, and now he's going to get Trevor Lawrence. Just feels undeserved to me. So get your thoughts on that and some of these other coaching jobs, and why Josh McDaniels and Eric Bieniemy haven't got jobs. That, and we'll lead into the Sports Hub Celtics show coming up here on Gasper and Murray.
Stay tuned for more Gasper and Murray on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
This is Gasper and Murray.
You will listen.
98.5, The Sports Hub.
I can't wait. That's the part of the game that I love, is to be able to adapt to the NFL player. And however, between white lines, I don't see a lot of difference. You know, I've studied the NFL game now for really years, but really studied it for the first time in my life for the last 6 months.
So that's new Jaguars head coach Urban Meyer. I don't get that hire, Chris. I don't at all. I know he was, look, I know he's one of the most accomplished college coaches of all time, and the programs he built with Florida and Ohio State. I mean, yeah, they were juggernauts. But that's college. And these guys that have never had a taste of any NFL experience that jump just from college to the NFL, I always feel like they fall flat on their face. One that immediately comes to mind is Chip Kelly. You know, it's UNH, Oregon, Eagles. And it worked for a minute, and then it didn't. Yeah. And Urban Meyer's never, like, been a coordinator. He's never been on an NFL staff. And he just jumps after being 2 years out doing broadcasting. I don't know. Like, is that the right guy for that job? And okay, like, maybe he's the right guy for Trevor Lawrence. But again, you still have 52 other players to account for. If I'm an established veteran, why am I going to take this guy seriously?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. You know, I'll be interested to see how he is regarded. It's not like Nick Saban, who came up as a defensive coach, starting with the Oilers, and then he worked for Bill Belichick in Cleveland. Then he was at Michigan State, LSU, wins a national title, bounces back to the NFL in Miami. This is an interesting one for me. And I'm just trying to think off the top of my head, you know, who's the last guy that did this who was really successful? Remember Greg Schiano flamed out?
Yep.
I think Matt Rhule's been pretty good. He seems to get a lot of rave reviews in Carolina. He's done well. But the last guy I can really think of is Jimmy Johnson. Remember Jimmy Johnson back in the day and what he built in Dallas? That's
30 years ago
but
now,
it was pre-salary cap he built that. But Jimmy Johnson was great. Great talent evaluator, great coach. I think it's a challenge. It's very difficult now because I don't think that the two games, the college game and the pro game, have ever been farther apart than they are right now. I mean, just watch that national championship game and you see what it is in terms of the talent differential between the teams, how wide open it is in college, what the, you know, in the NFL, it feels like every game is close. It comes down to a player or two here or there. In the college game, the elite teams, unless they're playing another elite team, like most of the time, they're just pulling away in the second half. And the question is, are they going to drop 50 on somebody?
So the other thing, too, and why is Josh McDaniels never got one sniff? Doesn't sound like he's going to be, you know, there's no interest with the Houston Texans. That was already squashed by John McClain, the like maybe one of the best NFL writers in the country from down in Houston. So there's no sniffs for him. Some of these teams have already found their guys, like the Jets and the Falcons. Sounds like the Lions are going to end up signing that bro coach.
Yeah, Dan Campbell.
Yeah, Dan Campbell.
Coach bro.
So nothing for McDaniels. Nothing really for Eric Bieniemy. Why?
You know, so I will say this. I have heard from people in the league, even people that would be in Eric Bieniemy's camp, that he just doesn't interview well. There's a feeling that he just doesn't interview well or present well, and maybe he doesn't come across as charismatic enough to be the head coach of your team. I do think it works against him that he's not like an offensive coordinator who basically is head coach offense for some team. He's with Andy Reid. Now, you think that would work with him when you look at that Andy Reid coaching tree, but I think it works against him. People look at him and say, here's an offensive coordinator, but Andy Reid's really the guy doing this, sort of similar to Belichick and some of the defensive people. And maybe people in the league look at it and say, well, with Belichick, we thought it was really Belichick all along, even though when they were telling us it was Matt Patricia, and look at the way he bombed in Detroit. So between the fact that he is under an offensive genius coach, which Andy Reid is, in Kansas City, so it's difficult to really credit Bienemy for what's happening there, and the fact that I've heard that he just doesn't wow you in interviews.
I mean, is he cutting farts in the interview? Like, how bad of an interview can you be?
I don't know. Again, I'm not in those interviews, but I've heard this from some folks in the league, and I think there's actually like a little bit of frustration that, and this, they're not blaming Eric Bieniemy, but I think there's a little bit of frustration among some of the minority scouts, personnel evaluators, and other coaches in the league that he's kind of gumming up the works. In other words, it's like, oh, there's these other people who could be getting opportunities, but until Eric Bieniemy gets his job, Eric Bieniemy is going to be the interview du jour, and it's harder for people like a Gerard Mayo. Now, Mayo does have the interview with Philadelphia, but it's harder for some of these other candidates who might wow somebody to get seriously considered, because there's this feeling of, well, you know, we have to make sure Eric Bieniemy gets his job, and he just might not be cut out for it. He might be one of those guys who's just, he's a coordinator and not a head coach.
Well, if nothing else, he'll always have one of the great Chris Berman nicknames of all time. Eric sleeping with Bieniemy. Boom, boom, boom. You got to be old like Chris.
Yeah, I know. Man, Berman's falling off, huh?
Oh, boy. Yeah.
It's sad.
Hey, you're with me, Leather. Look up that story if you don't know it. Just put in that and Chris Berman. It's excellent. When Deadspin actually used to be funny. All right, time for the headlines here. It sounds like another coaching vacancy has been filled in the NFL. Fill you in here with the headlines, and we'll get into 30 minutes of the Sports Hub Celtics show, leading you into Bruins pregame here on 98.5 of Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.